WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. There's an old saying that the first casualty in war is truth. The Serbian government has expelled foreign journalists from NATO countries, Serb citizens are prohibited from talking to the foreign press, and the principal independent radio station in Serbia, B92, has been shut down by the government. B92 broadcasts a mix of news, information, and rock music. A co-founder once described the station as symbolizing the right to information, one of the fundamental principles which has been ignored ever since Milosevic came to power. The station has been honored with awards from the International Press Institute and MTV. The government has shut down the station several times before, refusing to be censored. In 1996, B92 established a strong internet site, which has enabled it to reach people around the world. B92 is still broadcasting on their internet site, b92.net. My guest, Julia Glynn Pickett, has worked for B92 for the past 3 years. She's a spokesperson for the station and the manager of its English language service. She left Belgrade a couple of weeks ago for a brief trip to London, but has been unable to return to Belgrade. We talked to her this morning from the NPR Bureau in London. I asked her first why the station is called B92.
B92 stands for Belgrade 92.5 FM. 92 is also the Yugoslav equivalent of the number 911 for emergency services. So the idea was that you would be able to get urgent information from B92 radio station.
What's the difference between how you cover news on B92 and how that same news is covered on the state-sponsored radio?
There are a lot of differences between state-controlled television reporting and the reporting of B92. I think the most important difference is that B92 doesn't lie. B92 seeks to represent all political opinions and positions, which means that the radio station interviews representatives from all political parties, government and opposition. B92 promotes in its programming format the possibility for listeners to phone in and participate in programming. So it's very interactive with its audience. And it also has programming which supports different minority groups, different lobby groups. So, for example, there is a program which is which is for refugees. The program is bi-weekly. It's called Portukas, and the program provides legal and other information for Yugoslavia's very large refugee population. I don't know if you know, but following the conflicts in Bosnia and Croatia, Yugoslavia took the greatest number of refugees in the whole of Europe, and they now have 650,000 Serb refugees from Bosnia and Croatia. So B92 has those two weekly shows, for example, for the refugees.
Now, I understand the slogan of B92 is "Trust nobody, not even us."
That's right. I think you can get a feel for B92's humour through this slogan. This was a slogan that became the hallmark of B92 at the height of the propaganda during the conflicts in Bosnia and Croatia. And the idea was to provoke the public to start thinking about the information that they were receiving. So don't be just a passive recipient of this information. Think about it and decide, do you believe it or not?
Do you think most people have been passive recipients of propaganda?
I think we have to draw a line between the situation now and the situation a week ago. We had quite a strong indication of the interest of the publics in Serbia and Montenegro for receiving independent information just through our audience figures. State radio, until a week ago, state radio had about 2.5 million listeners. We had, with some 20% of their broadcasting capacity, 1.6 million. So I think that's a very strong indication of how people were using B92 because they wanted to have free information.
Now, back when you were still in Belgrade, how was B92 covering the Serb attacks on Kosovo?
B92, from the beginning of the Kosovo crisis last year, B92 has had at all times at least two correspondents based in Pristina and around Kosovo. We also had access to Albanian and Serbian sources on the situation, as well as access to international news agencies and a whole network of contacts who were able to give us information. So we were able to provide very comprehensive information about what was happening in Kosovo.
And how are those reports comparing to the ones on state-sponsored radio?
Until a week ago, basically the situation on state radio and television was that the reports were not covering at all anything that was happening among the ethnic Albanian community, except to accuse the ethnic Albanians of being terrorists, and that was the reason why the police were in Kosovo, which was to cleanse Kosovo of Albanian terrorism.
Looking back over the time that you've worked at B92 in Belgrade, what are the reports that you thought had the biggest impact on the country?
Oh, it's very difficult to answer that question. Every day there's another crisis, which means that every day there's another crisis report which is of enormous importance. I think one of the things about working for an organization in Yugoslavia is that you are in a perpetual state of emergency. So you never know quite what to expect when you go into the radio in the morning. I mean, I think even up until last Wednesday, there was still a surreal hope, in a way, that NATO would not strike and that Milosevic would sign the deal. And I know for a fact that everybody in the radio station, many of them still are in a state of shock, and all of them were in a state of shock for at least 24 hours after those NATO strikes began. So it's very, very difficult to identify the most important report or the most significant report that B92 has produced. I think you can identify different periods, different crises. B92 has followed all of the major crises over the past 10 years. During my time in B92, we've covered the mass civic demonstrations of 96, 97, before that date, the Dayton Agreement, then the mass demonstrations of 96, 97, then the dispute with Montenegro, then the dispute with Republika Srpska. Following that, we moved down to Kosovo, and we're still with the Kosovo conflict. And what you can see is a pattern of crisis after crisis after crisis.
I was reading that according to research conducted by the Institute for Social Science in Belgrade, about 45% of the population in Serbia hasn't finished elementary school, and about 70% hasn't finished high school. And this report also said that about 500,000 young people, mostly with higher education, have left the country in the past few years. And I know I've read over the years that a lot of intellectuals who lived in Belgrade have left the country in the past few years. For those intellectuals remaining in Serbia, does it feel like a kind of lonely situation?
I think one of the worst things about the last 10 years for people in Belgrade, but not just in Belgrade, throughout the country, is the extreme isolation that they have experienced. And this is particularly true for those people who've been looking to create a more outward-looking and European country to live in. And I think for them now, the NATO airstrikes are the last nail in the coffin. There was a degree of hope developing before the NATO airstrikes began that there would be a chance to solve the Kosovo crisis peacefully and start to live a normal life in Belgrade. I think those people now see there's no hope.
I'm wondering if you think that the state-sponsored media plays on the lack of education that the majority of people in Serbia have.
It's very interesting if you analyze the language of state television and the way that they report. It's a very, very complex language, a lot of dependent clauses, very complex syntax, a lot of often you hear them quoting Latin. So it's not a language that's directed, as you would think it would be, at capturing the hearts and minds of, and according to this research, what would imply is an illiterate population. I think one of the ways that that Radio Television Serbia is able to create a sense of confusion, which is essential if you are going to paralyze people in a way from taking action, is by using this very convoluted type of language. And this language is punctuated with inflammatory adjectives. So, for example, a report that, I mean, this is extreme because, as I say, that now you have a situation of war, but there was a report that came out on the 27th of March from Radio Television Serbia, which was referring to the Clinton and Albright address to the Serbian people. You have use of adjectives, for example, that Clinton is a murderer, that Albright is his henchwoman, that he's a bloodthirsty maniac. And then the end of the report finishes by saying, "That is the problem, you stupid murderer, you Adolf Goebbels, Clinton, you embarrassment and blemish on the United States and the world." So I think it's quite clear from that the type of information that people are receiving.
My guest is Julia Glenn Pickett, a spokesperson for the independent Serb radio station B92. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Julia Glenn Pickett, a spokesperson for B92, the independent radio station in Serbia. It was shut down by the government last week, but continues to broadcast on the internet. Glenn Pickett left Belgrade for London a couple of weeks ago. I wonder if you have any sense of what the decision-making has been like at B92 in figuring out how much to comply with Milosevic's restrictions on the media, the bans that he's put on all media. For example, not talking to the international press, including a spokesperson from the government in every story. I don't know if there are other, restrictions that the media has to comply with.
The situation at the moment is a situation of war. And as we all know, the first victim of war is always the truth. And it's B92 said, way back in October, if NATO bombs Yugoslavia, we will not be able to continue to report the way we are reporting now. And it will be a situation of war, and we will have to comply with government regulations in a situation of war. And that's what they are doing. And so it means that they are not reporting stories that are different from the ones, basically, that the state television and radio are putting out. But I think one thing that's very, very important is B92, as I said before, B92 is not telling lies. B92 is restricting itself to factual information about where, which sites have been bombed, where people can find shelters, and they're basically just trying to help their listeners to survive this very, very difficult time. And that's, I don't think that B92 has taken that order from on high. There's a general consensus throughout the whole news department of B92 that's what they should be doing, and that's what they are doing.
That the most important function they can play is just helping people survive on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. B92 news staff, they feel the most important thing is that they survive, that they help their listeners to survive on a day-to-day basis, that they stay there on the air for their listeners, that their listeners don't feel that their last bastion of hope, if you like, has also been turned off.
How much of that sense of helping listeners survive means keeping them entertained in the bomb shelters by playing music?
Well, B92 is also a music station. A lot of B92's time is given over to music programming, also phone-ins so people can phone in. B92 was broadcasting the concert in Belgrade yesterday that was organized by bands that are also sponsored by B92's music department. And I think this is very important for the B92 listeners, that they feel that there's something positive. in spite of everything that's going on. And I think that's the most difficult thing for the people in B92, which is to, and this is a real test for their professionalism, that they are able to convey a sense of hope in what is a desperate situation to their listeners.
If you were in Belgrade now, if you were back there, where would you be seeking refuge in the bomb shelter? What bomb shelter would you be using?
To be honest, I don't even know where the bomb shelters are. It was a situation where in October, every building was received written instruction of where they should send their employees and where people should go if the strikes began. But this situation now, that didn't happen. And so people found out about bomb shelters as the strikes started to happen. And the information took rather longer to come through than it had. And there was a lot less preparation than there was in October. So I don't even know where the bomb shelter would be if I were in Belgrade. Also, I don't know if I would probably go to a bomb shelter simply because as a foreign citizen, it would be extremely dangerous for me to go into a bomb shelter.
People would see you as representing the enemy?
Absolutely. And this is something else that we said again and again and again. If you bomb, then you will catalyze public support, if not for Milosevic, without doubt, against the West, against NATO. And people are now very angry, very upset. They feel very betrayed, especially those people who've been fighting for an alternative solution all these years. And you can't expect people to be understanding and friendly, even if they've known that you've been there for 3 years. It's an extraordinary situation, and you have to understand that.
Do you think that there are any people in Serbia who oppose the Milosevic government and who support the bombing as a way of uprooting Milosevic?
Absolutely not. That's a simple answer. Anyone who voiced political support for an alternative party to Milosevic's governing party and the coalition, not one of those people would support the bombing as a strategy for political change. So there's absolutely no support at all for the bombing in Serbia.
Your husband is in Serbia, and I'm wondering if you're able to stay in touch with him.
Fortunately, the telephone lines are still open. When the confirmation came through on Wednesday that the NATO strikes would indeed go ahead, our greatest worry was that we wouldn't be able to speak to each other. But thank God, until now, we have been able to speak to each other. And so I've been on the phone to him about every 2 hours, sometimes waking him up, which he's not too pleased about because he's working round the clock at the moment and only snatching half an hour's sleep here and there. But, yep, he's in Belgrade and he's safe and well and working hard.
If the phone lines do go down because of the bombing, that means that you and other people with loved ones in Serbia will lose contact. It would also mean that the internet broadcasts would have to end, wouldn't it? Because doesn't that rely on phone lines?
Yes, that's it. If international phone lines go, that means that Serbia is truly isolated from the world.
So is that a big concern of yours, that the bombs will down the phone lines?
If I had an ear to NATO, I would certainly tell them, apart from telling them, please stop the bombing, I would also say, please don't bomb the telecommunications systems.
How much knowledge do you think the people in Belgrade actually have about the Serbian attacks on ethnic Albanians in Kosovo? And about the huge number of refugees who are fleeing the country now and being forced out of the country?
There are two points I'd like to make. One point is that there has been a lot of inflammatory vocabulary used about what's happening in Kosovo at the moment. And I think that actually what that does is it it destroys any empathy that you might have among the Serbian people for ordinary Albanians. So when you start, when politicians start talking about genocide and scorched earth policy, which does come back into Serbia through through Radio Television Serbia, because of course they pick up on this and they quote it in their news, what it invokes among ordinary Serbian people is a sense of anger and outrage. So it actually, it's counterproductive. It destroys any possibility for empathy because of this inflammatory vocabulary that's being used. In terms of what information is available, there is very little information at all available in Belgrade and in the rest of Serbia at the moment about what's happening in Pristina and around and the rest of Kosovo. And, for example, B92 no longer has any reporters there, and so they have no way of having direct information, and they have no way of verifying the reports either way. And that's the situation.
Are you saying it's NATO and the Clinton administration that's using the inflammatory language?
I think it's across the board.
So you think when people use words like genocide and ethnic cleansing, that alienates people and ruins the chances of empathy?
I think that's definitely the situation in Serbia at the moment. Because you have to remember that the way that the Serbians remember, what the Serbians think is, well, what about what happened in Croatia in 1995 when 350,000 Serbs were driven out of Croatia by the Croat army that was receiving military support from the United States of America, and nobody said anything about it. The world was silent.
Okay.
This is the problem of using apparently simple solutions in an incredibly complex context.
Well, I wish you and your colleagues good luck, and I thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Julia Glenn Pickett is a spokesperson for B92. She recently left Belgrade for London. B92's internet site is b92.net. This is Fresh Air.